Hey, good morning. It's Patricia Murphy. It's Monday. This is Seattle Now. This pandemic has clarified how big the problems we face are. Today, a conversation about how we can be part of the solution with South Seattle Emerald founder and publisher Marcus Green. He has a new book with some insight about the power of turning inward for answers to some of our most complex challenges. I'll talk with Marcus in a minute, but first, let's get you caught up. Seattle could pass more new limits on landlords today. Right now, tenants get 2 months' notice before any rent hikes. The city council is considering making that 6 months. Another change would make landlords pay to help relocate a tenant if they can't afford to pay rent that goes up by 10% or more. The council is set to vote on both proposals this afternoon. A former state employee is in court today on charges he used insider status to steal pandemic unemployment benefits. Reyes de la Cruz III of Moses Lake faces multiple counts of wire fraud, bribery, and identity theft. The U.S. Attorney's Office alleges that de la Cruz stole hundreds of thousands of dollars in benefits for himself, friends, and family after he was hired by ESD to help process claims in April of last year. Prosecutors say he pocketed at least $130,000 for himself off the scam. And there'll be no back-to-back WNBA championship for the Storm. They lost their winner-go-home playoff game in overtime against Phoenix yesterday. Breanna Stewart, out with an injury, didn't help. You can still root on UW all-time leading scorer Kelsey Plum, though, when the Las Vegas Aces play Phoenix tomorrow night. In a year and a half of making this podcast, we have had some great conversations with amazing people in our city. Some of my favorites have been with South Seattle Emerald founder Marcus Green. He's got a new collection of essays out called Readying to Rise. Marcus uses his life story to show how big systemic change can start by individuals looking inward. We met up at Seattle's Kubota Garden, a 20-acre Japanese garden in Rainier Beach, one of his favorite spots in the city.
I'm fully vaxxed, by the way.
Same.
Just a warning, there's some talk about suicide, so this conversation may not be appropriate for everyone. But I started by asking Marcus what was so special about Kubota Garden for him.
This was always a place in my life that was an area that provided a level of recalibration. I think we all inevitably have those moments in life where we steer off the path that we're on, or we fall, or we tumble, and we always need a place or something or somewhere to come back and to sort of refocus and reset. And that was what Kubota Garden was always like for me. Especially growing up, I felt a lot of alienation. You know, I was a kid from Rainier Beach who was going to private schools, many times, you know, be one of the few black students there, and one of the few black students with, you know, in terms of, you know, my socioeconomic background as well. And so this was a place that always felt like home.
You know, it's amazing you had a touchstone like this, because I would imagine for a lot of people, as the hummingbird flies by.
Yes. This is idyllic, I gotta tell you. This is, you know.
It really is. This important touchstone got you through some incredibly difficult periods of your life.
Yeah, everything from, I'll tell you, when I would encounter things like, just to be candid, and I talk about it a little bit in the book, like suicide ideation. I was somebody who, at the time, did not know that I had a bipolar disorder, and had these very extreme mood shifts. I could be extremely depressed many times, and this was one of the few places that you could come to and be drawn to and just be. It was as if you were, it welcomed you in a way that home welcomes you, right? In a way that you don't need an invitation to go home, that you can just go here and just be. That's what this place was to me, and is to me.
And that idea of home is so important to have. And I think one of the things that I get a sense of when I read the essays you chose for your book is that you have plumbed the depths in your soul and you're offering your wisdom.
Yeah. Well, one, I got to get you to write a blurb on the back of the, you know, volume two. But I will say, I mean, with this book, I definitely wanted to display my humanity. I think, especially nowadays, we're very social media heavy, and it's almost as if everybody is trying to be a brand and trying to be a personality, where you don't show sort of the messiness and the complexity of what it means to be a human being. I always think of it as the Japanese art of katsui, which is sort of the Japanese pottery where they fill the broken, you know, places, you know, with gold to make the vase or whatever it is that much more valuable. I think that's sort of what a good description of us as human beings, right? It's the broken places many times that we seek to fill, you know, that can make us, you know, that much more human and more valuable.
That is the other thing I took away from your book, Marcus, is your belief in humanity, your commitment that people can be good even in the worst situations. Yeah. And good is the wrong word. I think that's the wrong word.
Yeah, I see that people can be just and be fair and be empathetic and be compassionate, right? Anywhere you have human beings, you know, history teaches us, right? The history of humanity teaches us that anywhere you have human beings, right, you're going to have sometimes horrors and sometimes tragedies and sometimes, you know, gross injustice. But anywhere you have human beings, you're also going to have, for lack of a better term, you know, hope and faith and resilience and resistance and love. And so to me, it's what we, you know, choose. What is it that we're choosing to nurture as a society, as individuals? Because ultimately, another theme of this book is it's individual change that matches in some ways social change, right? In the sense that, I think it's James Baldwin who said that all society is just a reflection of our internal lives, right? Mm. I mean, I look at things that have happened recently, whether it's the January 6th insurrection or what have you, and I'm thinking of, you know, when I'm seeing images of that replayed over and over again, the insurrection on January 6th, there's no way that a person who does that or people who do that can have a belief in themselves believing that they are loved or believing that they are whole or believing that, you know, every human being is entitled to the same rights that they have. So I think that's, when you talked about themes of the book, I think that's the main one is, how do we change simultaneously while attempting to also better our world? So I think what COVID has done is give us an opportunity to truly examine our society. And I just hope we don't waste this time in trying to go back to what was when it wasn't necessarily always working for everyone.
We definitely revealed truths that were conveniently easy to put away prior to the pandemic.
Yeah,
we learned a lot about ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had to surrender, many of us had to surrender our ignorance about certain things, yeah. Right? There was no way now to look away. There was no way to feign distraction from something or feign, you know, ignorance from, you know, social injustices and so forth. And I think now, you know, people do have to confront things that they maybe didn't have to confront before, that they had the privilege to not confront. And now I think what COVID did allow was for us to say, no, we have to look in the mirror right now. And you may not like what you see, but at the very least, we have to encounter it.
I'm curious where you draw from on your worst days.
I have a good friend who says, on days like today, meaning bad days, he'll say, it's good for me to remember that I've survived 100% of the worst days of my life. And I probably have had to say that more often than I care to admit recently. But it is a reminder, right? It is a reminder that, you know, whatever axiom you want to go with, this too shall pass, you know, tomorrow is another day, take it day by night. It is a reminder that this is a moment in time. And especially, you know, I've had, prior to accepting a diagnosis with bipolar disorder, I had a few different times where I had tried to take my own life. And I remember somebody saying that is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Mm. And so for me, it is trying to have perspective. I think that's the thing where I draw faith from, if you will.
I really appreciate you sharing all of this because I believe specificity is so important when we're talking about things.
Yes.
And people's stories resonate in so many different ways. I wonder what you hope readers take away from your book.
I want them to take away from the fact that life, I don't know how this might sound, and I'm trying not to sound hokey, but I want them to take away from the fact that they don't need to be a spectator in life, right? That they don't need to be a social change, individual change is not a spectator sport. And for us to get to the world we want to become what we might be, it does truly take everybody playing their role, playing their part. Where it doesn't matter where you're at, like wherever you are, you can affect change and you can impact change. And I would hope that that would be the message that people, one of the messages that people would take away. I also hope that the other message is that, man, life is freaking, can be freaking beautiful, and it can be such an experience. And I would hope that people would, it would make, I hope the book would make people reassess how they're choosing to live life. And, you know, if it's in a way that does not work for you, or a way that isn't, that honestly you're, somebody said to me once, sometimes people die before they're dead. And so to reevaluate, you know, what it means to truly be alive, I think would also be something that I want people to think about after reading this book.
Marcus Green, thank you for sharing the spectrum of your life and your well-examined, thoughtful perspective.
Thank you for having me, Trish. It is always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Caroline Chamberlain Gomez produced today's show. Our production team is Claire McGrain, Diana Opong, Jenny Cecil Moore, and Jason Pagano. Matt Jorgensen does our theme music. I'm Patricia Murphy.